Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to The Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners, macabre murders and captivating crimes from across the centuries, and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 157.
Hurrah!
Hurrah!
Hurrah, indeed.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
We shall tell all of the cotillion of our many, many podcast episodes.
Of our many episodes, absolutely.
I mean, we joke. That's what we do at every event. That's what
absolutely.
I do.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got it on business cards. I have to get a new business cards every week. It's really annoying.
Yes, yes. But then enough about my podcast. I'm so sorry for your funeral. Why would I be saying that to the corpse, by the way, as well?
Just leave it as a stack of business cards in the pocket.
When you get to hell, tell the devil I said hello.
Well, I can leave that at funeral parlours, churches.
Bar mitzvahs.
Bar mitzvahs, absolutely, yeah. And we got bored at wedding. Oh, I'll pick up this flyer. Ooh, a nice podcast.
I mean, that actually makes sense. You get bored at weddings. Absolutely. There's a lot of speeches.
Listen to some nice podcasts on the side.
Yeah, and then you'll laugh along in an honest really way.
Inappropriate but different timing sort of way.
Someone's talking about their dead grandmother. Yeah. And someone left all these podcast cards at her funeral. Ha!
Sorry, forward. New advertising stream, I feel.
It's a strange aside, actually. I've got to do networking tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And my husband's coming with because it's free wine. And I said, do you want to come with? And I said, do I have to teach you how to network? Because his idea of networking is just going, hello, to people.
Hello, cricket.
Cricket, cricket. Or he just kept coming up with terrible chat up lines. And I'm like, you're not going there to score. A, I'm with you. And he's like, no, I know, I'm joking. He's like, isn't that what you do? No, you don't just go up to them and go, hey there, beautiful. It's just a series of Simpsons lines. So yeah. Should be fun tomorrow.
That's going to be interesting. I might turn up and just watch.
How are you, Nick?
I think I'm all right.
You're all right? Yeah. You're pretty much back to normal health?
I think so, yeah. Still coffee.
Still a bit coffee.
Still got a tickly throat, which is very annoying. It won't go away.
Oh, no.
Especially in the evening.
In the evening?
Yeah. I lie in bed, coughing away. But during the day, it doesn't bother me.
That's because you're lying down, surely.
Of an evening. It's like, I'm going to get you.
Is that what the germs are doing?
That's what he's doing, yep.
Okay, oh, I'm sorry.
That's annoying.
You're milking it a bit now, though, aren't you?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I've got to make the most of it. No one cares otherwise.
Oh, no.
Woe is me.
Yeah, snap out of it. I'm going to go into Irish mammy mode in a bit. I've been kind to you. I've tended to you. I've been really nice. But a bit of my mother's going to come out in a minute going, you know what will make you better? Make me a cup of tea. Clean your room.
No.
See, I'm fighting fit and live with the darkness inside me. Yes. Yeah. Well, any poisonings this week?
Well, possibly one.
Okay.
Possibly. Because I've made an offer on a house. And they haven't responded to me yet. So I think the only possible reason why they haven't responded is because they're dead. Why else would they be holding out?
It has been a day, Nick.
Yeah, I know. I'm really impatient.
He has been in a mood since he has put the offer in. Sort of stomping around like, not just like, oh, I'm in.
Stomping around.
A bit. It's like it's a personal slight against you. Of course they're going to wait. Going to make you wait.
Yeah, bastards. Well, I'm going to kill them then.
Do you feel like someone's poisoned them or they have poisoned themselves rather than respond to your offer?
Yeah, well, it could be either. It could be either, really.
It was so insulting that they killed
them. It's a sort of spiteful thing that I would do, probably. It's the only possible explanation.
We gave them your offer and they died.
How these things work.
Fair enough. Okay, well, we'll see how that works out.
So that's exactly what's going on.
But you know what? We've all got our fingers and toes crossed for you, Nick. All the podcast community, all of you listeners, wish Nick luck. Think positive thoughts. Manifest this for Nick.
Yes.
Don't manifest your own stuff.
No, it's all about me. It's all about... Oh, God. Ah, the germs are back.
He's creating this Victorian melodrama. Why don't you do this in the estate agent? My consumption grows ever worse. I require a dry house.
I need somewhere lovely to go and die.
Well, I don't know if I want this to work out for you now.
I need somewhere for my final days.
Fainting couch.
That's all there is. That's the only furniture is in there.
That's your moving in gift. There's a fainting couch and a bag of Revels.
Excellent.
You love Rebels.
Sounds grand.
Wonderful. Well, speaking of over-dramatising moving day and...
Over-dramatising indeed.
And Rebels, I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
That we should. We've had many people coming and going all over the place, and people have joined us who have come back to us.
Yes.
Left us and come back. And so thank you very much.
And lots of upgrades as well.
Indeed. So thank you very much. If you are a patron, you're a bloody marvel.
You are a wonder. We love you very much. A whole bunch of people have just got their new cyanide connoisseurs packs.
Ooh,
so
yes.
Stickers and fridge magnets and little recipes and little gifts for them have arrived in the post. It took long enough. Royal Mail really did a number on me there. Yep. With one of our lovely, lovely, gorgeous Patreons, just like was checking in with them, going, have they arrived? No. I'm like, I swear to God, I sent them 2 weeks ago. I have the receipts.
Got to get halfway across the world.
They do. Yes. Yes. Australia, in 6 months, somehow you'll get something.
Maybe something at some point.
Thank you. You're all a wonder. And it's a lovely place over in Patreon. We had fun. We spoke of a murderous, a milkman murder.
Oh, milkman. Yes. Death by milkman.
Death by milkman. Death by milk and scandalous milkman as well.
Yes, it was at the end.
It was. It was a good short story of scandal. Yeah. Packed a lot in.
Yeah, we made a lot of shit up.
We did, actually. Well, we made a lot of theories up, actually. Yeah, yeah. We solved that case.
Yeah, yeah. And many others, I feel.
It's a wonderful place, Patreon. If you would like to know more, you can always message us or head over to patreon.com/thepoisonouscabinet. Look at the various tiers. Have a little dip your toe in. There are many, many episodes and fun things to find
many,
on there.
Many.
Many.
Many episodes.
Well, Nick, are you ready?
Okay.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison.
What's you and your strange voices?
Or
it's very unnerving.
Could drink some poison and talk about the cocktails.
Let's talk about some cocktails.
Are you talking about cocktails?
Talk about cocktails.
All right. Well, it seems like you have a ready supply of poison.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got a whole thing going
way
on.
Way ahead.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that. You start.
We'll get to that. Okay.
And you show me how it's done, and then I will follow. But for now, let's have a cocktail.
Okay.
While we ponder the poison option. Hooray! Well, it is Nick's story this week, and we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavour our cocktail of the week. Nick's story, so his pick, and this week's secret ingredient is...
a lovely oak tree.
An oak tree.
Yes. An oak tree.
An oak tree,
an
you
oak
say?
Tree.
Oh, an old British oak.
No, not one of those.
No, not?
A
no.
Different, a
oh,
different one.
An American oak?
Who knows?
A Belgian oak.
Classic Belgian oaks.
Belgian oak.
Let's go with oak.
I like it. Okay. Well, I mean, I dread to ask, are we having an oaked Chardonnay?
Oh, I didn't think of that. That would be good. I like it. I don't mind a Chardonnay.
I don't mind a Chardonnay. Fair off with your oaked stuff, though. Yeah. Oh, that was a big thing in the 90s. Do you remember that?
Yeah, Chardonnay was a big thing in the 90s.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Bridget Jones's Diary and everything. And Chardonnay, give Chardonnay another go, people. But other than that, well, we'll just get some wine. And
we'll just get some wine.
We'll just get some Pinot Gris and
be done with it.
Put some elm in it. It'll be lovely. We'll make our own wine. But so to accompany our homemade wine, what are we having?
We are having...
Yes.
A lone oak.
Okay. Ooh. Mm. Ooh, that sounds spooky.
Spooky. Spooky, lonely. Oak. On a hill.
Well, they often are.
Well, quite.
Why?
It's quite big, I suppose. Take a lot of space. A lot of nutrients. Don't like competition, I would imagine.
You get a ring of oaks, though. You get them all in a line on a hill.
That's where someone's planted them.
What happened to the lone oak? It walked there.
Yes. That's actually an ant.
Well, maybe that's it. They're just moving very slowly. They're like, oh, fuck, someone's looking. Lovely. I like it. A lone oak. Sounds elegant. Sounds fancy. I think it is high time for us to skip into the poisonous cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
So, Nick, we have a lone oak.
Lone oak.
It looks creamy.
Yeah.
Well, not creamy, but yellowy
yeah,
and thick.
Yeah, it's curious.
Oh.
It's not, well, it's not our usual brown.
Well, when you say curious, I'm worried that you thought it was going to be brown and this happened.
I didn't think it was going to be brown.
No.
I didn't expect... I don't know what I expected, to be honest.
I mean, it's a custard colour, really, yeah. and appears to be that sort of consistency, but we won't know.
I tell you now, there's no custard involved.
Aww.
Which is disappointing now you've mentioned
it. Yeah, I don't mind a cup of custard every now and then. Okay, well, yeah. It looks... I don't know what makes it oaky, but maybe we'll find out. Well, yeah, it looks indeed. Like a yellow oak Chardonnay, doesn't it? No. A bad one.
A very, very bad one.
All right, well, let's dive in. Smell. Ooh, it smells of things.
Oh, things. God, your palate has improved markedly over 4 years.
I think we must dive in.
Give it a go.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Oh, well,
I can see through time.
Oh, that's deeply unpleasant.
Oh, good Lord, Nick.
No, none of that.
That's just an entire lemon.
That's no. No, I don't like that.
What did you do? It's so lemony. It's like
it's
drinking...
a lot of lemon going on. I'm just going to look at the recipe.
Can you double check the recipe? Because that ain't right.
I have put the appropriate amount of lemon juice called for by the recipe.
Second sip? I'm shudder too, because I don't know if I'll get the use of my lips back. It's easier on the second sip-ish.
Well, he says your palate's slightly used to it. By the
yeah, because your palate's been shot to pieces. It's still a bit weird, though.
No, I'm not a fan of that.
My face is sort of crunched in on itself. It's that line from Succession. If I cringe anymore, I'll become a fossil.
So, well, apart from lemon, give me a guess.
I don't know. It's not very pleasant. Load of lemon, like so sharp. Then a little dance of flavour. Something herbal, maybe? And then
might
it just absolutely falls off a cliff. Like you were drinking lemony water suddenly.
I don't like that.
It's just a bad cocktail.
It's just not very nice.
It's not as bad as like the Golden Cadillac.
It's not bad as some, but it's just...
Oh, dear. No. What a waste of liquor. Well, talk us through this monstrosity, Nick.
Okay. Well, yes, there is lemon juice.
Shocking! Shocking! Yeah. How much?
2/3 of an ounce.
That's not a lot.
No.
At all.
But it obviously comes across very, very strongly. Whiskey. Irish whiskey.
Oh, Jesus, really?
Yep. A dash of chartreuse. I mean, you're talking a 1/6 of an ounce. So tiny amount. The weird thing, which I can smell, I can't taste it, but I can smell it, and I think is giving it this consistency and this look.
Custard.
The pistachio.
No.
Yeah.
Why did you do this to the lovely pistachio?
Now, the recipe does call for a pistachio syrup, which I don't have. I've got the pistachio liqueur.
Oh.
So I don't know. I have a feeling
like
potentially
the
syrup might be a lot sweeter, counterbalancing the lemon.
Do you think this would work if we put sugar syrup
in? So potentially, half tempted to grab some of the sugar.
Should we do a live mix-up?
Yeah,
okay,
for
hang
it.
On. Right, live people. Right, what am I getting? Am I getting the agave or this one? Or what am I doing? Talk me through it, Nick.
Yeah, you're having fun there.
I don't know. I'm panicking, Nick. I'm panicking.
I'm going to say a drop of the honey syrup.
Ooh.
Might.
Clever boy.
Do something. Can you check us a spoon as well?
Yes. No.
Right in front of you.
Yes. I'm sorry. I get so nervous when I'm near the cabinet when I'm live because I just... The intrusive thoughts are, just smash everything.
And there the podcast ended.
And that's it. It's this overwhelming fear that I'm going to break stuff. And there's a voice in my head going, do it. What do you reckon then?
Give it a wee splash.
Okay, well, we're just pouring some honey syrup in. You say when.
Step.
Handing the bottle over to Nick. I will take the giant spoon, the ceremonial spoon. It's quite thick, yeah.
Yeah, so
it's sunk
it's
a bit.
It's going to need a...
Stirry. It's a big spoon, very small glass.
Yeah.
I mean, there may be no saving this. Right, we've added the honey syrup.
Added a dash of the honey.
Let's see if that makes any improvement. Ah.
Yes, it needs that sweetness. Obviously, you obviously must get that with the pistachio syrup.
Definitely different.
So.
It's still not great.
It's still not great.
It's drinkable now. Yeah. Would you think that was drinkable now?
I'll probably polish that off. Yeah. Just because it's here.
Yeah, and you don't want to waste it because that was some good stuff in there as well. So the honey syrup obviously takes the edge off the lemon.
Fairness to the recipe, it does require pistachio syrup. I tried to substitute and obviously didn't work.
It's still only okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's drinkable now. It's still the same thing. Lemon. The fact that chartreuse is in there is lost on me.
Completely. The fact that there's whiskey in there is completely
the
lost
whiskey,
on me.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it just completely falls off a cliff because you kind of get, it's like you've lumbered up and you've got lemon. Oh, and something else. Oh, no, nothing. Well, okay.
Well, boo.
Well, the lone oak is alone for a reason.
Yes, quite.
It knows what it's done.
And it, won't
and
do
it will stay on that hill until it learns.
For emergency use only.
Is it time for a story,
it
Nick?
It certainly should be.
Hooray! I have a mediocre drink. I'm happy. I don't have to do anything this week. I'm delighted.
So, it is February 1855.
Delicious.
And we are deep in the woods of Montauban, around 20 miles outside the city of Lyon.
Ah, we're in France. It's a French oak.
It's a French oak.
I hope.
There is a French oak involved.
Right, okay, good.
further down the line.
Does it have a berry?
Yes, it does. And it's adorned with garlic and bicycles.
And all the other contributions that the French have made to history.
Exactly.
Yes.
Guillotines.
Wow, okay.
A group of hunters are stalking through the forest and they come across a horrifying sight. Body of a young woman, naked, covered in blood. Her face and head have suffered 6 deep slashes. Ooh. And she is clearly dead. Her hands and feet are bruised and scratched, where she's obviously tried to defend herself and flee through the forest, but she has been overcome by her attacker, and here she lies. One of the group is sent off to alert the authorities, and the others sort of spread out to try and see if they can find anything, see what they can find. And they come across various articles of discarded clothing. There's a handkerchief, there's a black lace cap, there's a pair of shoes. All these things sort of scattered around in the vicinity of the body. The authorities soon arrive, and the woman's body is relocated to a nearby barn while they wait for the doctor to arrive to try and ascertain time of death and all those sort of doctory things.
The doctor is going to do some doctoring.
His doctor is going to do some doctoring.
Oh, dear God. Oh, what a horrible scene.
Yeah, indeed, absolutely. They're out sort of hunting boar or something like that. They come across this dead young woman. Now, no one in the local area recognises this woman. She's not in any of the sort of the little surrounding hamlets and villages.
No one's missing.
No one who comes to view the body knows who this woman is. Her likeness is distributed further and further and further afield to try and get an identification. Eventually, in Lyon itself, in the city, someone identifies her and she is given a name, Marie Bidet. Now, Marie had...
Is her name Bidet?
Bidet. B-A-D-A-Y.
Oh, good. Oh, okay. That's how the Americans say B-Day. They say bidet.
It's not that, though.
It's not that. Everyone, it's not.
It's not that.
It's not a B-Day.
No. This is a dead woman here.
I know.
She's not a toilet, everyone.
That's why I'm saying it. It's very important.
Right. Now we've got that out of the way. So Marie, she had worked as a servant girl in Lyon until only a week or so earlier, when she had unexpectedly quit her job. Mm-hmm. When her employer had asked her, why are you leaving? Why do you want to go? Marie replies that a man from the country has offered her a job. Offered her a job in a wealthy country home. The pay is too good to pass up. The only downside was that if she was interested, she had to go now. The family were in desperate need. If she wants a job, she's got to go. So she does. She packs up her trunk and heads off to the station, daydreaming of this new and exciting life that she is going to lead.
Oh dear, this is not a good start.
Yeah, and obviously that was not to be. The next thing anyone knows, she appears bludgeoned, naked under a tree. Now, the only lead the authorities really have, no one has seen her since she left her employer in Lyon. Yes, she was seen at the station, but no one has seen anyone with her. No one has saw the other side when she got off the train and she was walking through the woods. No one knows. The only lead they have is this man who supposedly offered her this job. They need to try and track this chap down. He is the one who has apparently lured her out of the city. If he's not responsible, he must be involved somehow.
Yeah.
The authorities visit various offices and recruitment agencies in the city, deal with domestic staff, and they try and identify this man. But no one is any the wiser. No one has come in placing adverts for staff wanted in for any country houses or anything like that. As they continue their search and their inquiries, they do find out about another servant girl, Marie Cart, who has also been approached by a country looking man, he's described as.
Right. Okay. What?
Looks like he's not a city chap.
Not a city chap.
He's a country man.
Country mouse. There he is. Ear of corn. Dead giveaway.
he's gone around claiming to be an agent looking for staff for a country house. The proposition that was given to Marie Cart was the same. A fantastic opportunity, great pay, etc. But you have to start now. You have to come right with now. Me now. Now, Marie Carte was not so easily swayed. Yeah, she was happy with her current position, though she did tell the chap that if he is still looking for someone in a month's time, come back to Lyon, track her down, and we'll talk about it again. If you're still trying to find someone, we'll have a chat and see what's what. And then she sort of forgets about it. Now, the police still have no name for this man. They now have a loose description that Marie Carte has given. Say, a country-looking man in his 50s. He has a scar on his upper lip that she noted. That's about it. So, not much to go on, really. Authorities, they have no idea where to go next. They cannot track this man down. They've got no one who's seen Marie Bidet as she goes around. So her murder is relegated to the back pages of the paper and soon is quietly forgotten about as other new exciting cases come along. But then on the 4th of March, about a month later, the same man tracks down Marie Carte again, as she has suggested. She had said, in a month's time, if you're still looking, come and find me. And he does exactly that.
Fair enough, right? Okay.
Now, I'm assuming that the authorities hadn't revealed to Marie Carte that this man was suspected of being involved in the death of another young woman. Because while she herself decides, no, actually, I'm fine, I'm happy where I am, she does refer him to a friend of hers. Who was looking for a job at Olympie Alibert. I'm assuming she wouldn't have done that if he knew he was a suspect in a murder.
No, I guess. Yeah, she seems quite savvy, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, So she's obviously none the wiser about why they are looking for this man.
But that's it. Is that, you know, she being shifty, did she give any cause that he was a bit shifty that she wasn't taking this job? Because it seems like a job that's too good to be true.
Well, obviously, she's recommending him to a friend to him. Yeah. To say, well, I don't want this job, but if you want it, go for it.
Oh, yeah,
you can't have had that many reservations if you're trying to...
I don't know. Scruples like, yeah, I don't want you bothering anyone. Yeah, but kill her. It's fine.
Yes, perhaps she wasn't a mate at all. She was a bit of rival.
That was it, yeah. I've not liked her for ages, so collateral damage.
So, I mean, it turns out the Olympia, she was delighted with the proposition, with the opportunity granted, and she leaves with the mystery man. That very afternoon, they leave Lyon train station. They leave the train at Montloy and start the cross-country walk to her new employer. Night is starting to fall as they enter the woods of Montauvern. The same woods where Marie Bidet's body had been discovered a few weeks before.
No, don't go in the woods.
Yeah.
No.
Well, something in the woods begins to unnerve Olympie. She is like, this is weird.
Yes, this is like the darkened woods with the man with the scar on his face just going, follow me, child.
Something's not right here.
Is there a sacrificial altar that's been laid out? And she goes, that's a bit weird.
Yeah, well, there's no house inside. They've now been walking for a couple of hours.
What?
I mean, people then, they expect you walk long distances.
Not two hours.
Well, no, a big country house in the middle of nowhere somewhere. But yeah, that's why she starts thinking, this is not normal. This is, I'm being led around the houses here or something.
Like, 8 hours later, she went, wait a minute.
So she decides, I've had enough.
She's got 2 hours to walk back.
I'm not doing that. She turns and she runs. She legs it. She abandons her trunk and she just fucks off out of there. Get out of there. And she flees towards the lights of a distant building. Okay. So it's not the house they're aiming for. It's a little farm building, a little cottage or something like that.
See something.
But she sees habitation somewhere and she legs it. And she is able to find sanctuary.
Does she shout sanctuary?
She does. She's running towards the cottage.
Sanctuary! They're like, not again!
Now, Olympia, she goes to the police about her frightening encounter. There's this weird man offering jobs and then
taking
girls to the woods. But she's not actually been attacked, say the police. Well, did anything actually happen? No. Did he attempt anything? No. He was just really weird and creepy. But did he try anything? No. So the authorities actually get more pissed off with her than they do with this man who is supposedly trying to lead her astray into the fuck knows where. And they say, well, you have broken your promise to work in this fancy house. There is now probably a grand family out there who are desperate, without a maid, without a servant. You've left them in the lurch.
Yeah, yeah. Magical family that doesn't exist in this house in the woods. That's
just because you got a bit jumpy in the dark. Get out,
victim,
they
baby.
Say. So they do nothing about any of that. But then in September, a man answering the same description persuades another young woman, Josephette Chartley, to accompany him and take up again this mystery job. As before, the pair leave the city, and as they walk and they walk and they walk and they walk, night draws in. Josephette, like a limpy, goes, nah, balls to this. Yeah. I am not having this. And she runs as well. She abandons her trunk and she legs it again to another little hamlet that she sees in the distance.
I must say at this point that it's very tense. It feels very frightening. I'm also going to say he's shit at what he's doing. Maybe he's clearly had success once, but all these women, he's like, God damn, they're running away.
They're running away.
Shit, why do I keep walking them past this lovely cozy farm that they run into? All these women are getting into the woods after 2 hours going, nope, and then running. And can he not run?
Well, apparently, no one says that they hear him chase or anything like that. Perhaps he's after their trunks.
Oh,
they,
maybe they he's a thief. Okay.
He's after their abandoned... Yeah, it seems like a lot of effort.
A lot of effort to rob someone.
Steal a servant's clothes.
Yeah, which would be nothing.
Which is not going to be anything great and fancy.
But these two women have managed to run away. I'm glad. I'm very, very pleased that they got away. But also,
it's a bit weird.
It's just weird. Okay.
It's weird.
Yeah.
No,
tell me more. I demand more.
Well,
story.
No. Nothing happened. Now nothing happens. Oh. Nothing happens for the next 6 years, apparently.
6 years?
The woods of Monteverne seem to be quiet. No screaming, no running. Nothing is happening in the woods. They think, well, perhaps this unknown mystery man, has he moved on elsewhere? Has he gone somewhere else? Or has he got a lot more successful, maybe?
Oh, shit. Don't say that. Don't say that.
We don't know.
Oh, God, has he been luring
then girls? Then late at night, the 26th of May, 1861, so we're now 6 years later, there is a wild banging on the door of a farm in the small village of Balan, one of the several hamlets that dot the area. When this wary farmer opens the door, he is confronted by a terrified woman begging for help. Her clothes are ripped and torn. She has no shoes. Her hands and feet are bruised and scratched from running and stumbling through the forest. Now, also, the farmer takes her in straight away and bars the door and summons the police from Montreuil to hear the woman's story. Her name is Marie Pichon, and she tells the officers about how earlier that day she had been going about her business in Lyon when she had been approached by a man near the servant's office, near the recruitment office for domestic staff. The man casually struck up a conversation asking if she was looking for employment. And she replies, yes, she's in the market for a new job. He says, I have got exactly the right thing for you. He tells her that he was a gardener at a chateau near Montreuil, and then the mistress of the house has sent him in the city to find a new maid. He goes on to say, well, the work is easy and the pay is great.
It's almost too good to be true.
He says the old woman, she always has guests staying who tip the staff really well. It's an easy gig if you can get it. The only downside is she needs someone now.
Today.
She needs someone today.
What a coincidence.
Now, Marie, she's entirely taken in by this chap. She reports his appearance, his language, his manner are all beyond reproach. There was nothing about him that suggested something dodgy. He looked entirely respectable. He spoke well.
They always
He looked
do.
Well. He was dressed well.
Again, and, I mean, most people probably wouldn't have gone with someone who was rubbing their hands together with glee, with one giant monocle and a big top hat and a knife.
Yeah, and she accepts on the spot. She spends that afternoon sort of putting her affairs in orders and such like, and then she... Well, that sounds slightly fine.
This is quite grand.
Slightly final.
Goes back going, yes, Miss Temple, take a letter. I'm not your secretary. I don't know who you are.
But packing her trunk.
Packing, putting your affairs in order. I'm never going on holiday with you again.
Put your affairs in order before we leave.
Shit.
Do you have a will?
And the fact that you maybe bring a trunk as well.
She meets up with the chap again at the train station. Mm-hmm. And they board the train for Montreuil, arriving about 7:30 that evening. Now, the chap explains that the house is about an hour and a half walk from the train station. But it's not a difficult journey. He carries Marie's trunk Mm-hmm. While she has a small little bag and her umbrella, and off they go. They walk for some time along the road, but then suddenly the man veers off and starts going across country through some little paths and things that are not entirely through a forest, but there's a little country path that's been travelled through. And he takes a diversion. He calls out that it is much, much quicker to cut across than follow the road round. Half the time to get there. So, okay, fine, she thinks. Follows away. As they approach sort of every clearing or every bend in the path, the man assures her that the house is going to come into sight any minute. The house, just around this corner, you'll see the house. That's where we're going. Yeah, of course, it never does. Marie says that throughout all of this, the man has been friendly. He's been chatting away. He's been helping her across if there's a bit of difficult terrain or something. Mm. He's helping her across.
The perfect gentleman.
Mindful of her progress. Yeah, exactly. The perfect gentleman. That is until they reach the crest of a small hill. Now, from this vantage point, Marie can see for quite some distance in all directions. And there is no big house anywhere to be seen. There is no chateau on the horizon. So she goes, okay, what's going on here? She's... tries to make conversation with this man, asking how much further there are. Now all she gets are grunts and mumblings in response.
Oh, no
conversation anymore. She says as he walks on, he seems to linger, picking up a rock, judging it in his hand.
Christ.
And then tossing it away sort of thing. More, but maybe picking up a branch. I don't want that stick. Maybe
an axe.
He discards it. Because he's like, I've got a cannon. And he's like, nah, I don't want
that. That's a bit much. A tiger. Yeah. Mm.
Now, Marie actually asks, has he dropped something? Noticing how he's interested and carefully he is searching the ground. No, he says. He thought he saw a plant for his garden, a rare plant for his garden, but no. It's all good.
Okay.
Now, Marie is starting to get seriously freaked out now. She thinks of running. She thinks of just, fuck it, I'm going to leg it and then take my chances. But she's convinced that she is going to get chased down by this big fit man. He's gonna overtake her. He's gonna overpower her if she runs. So she decides against that.
I'm also only thinking at this point of the practicality. They've got a trunk.
Yeah, he's still carrying.
He's carrying a big old.
He's still carrying trunk. This trunk. Well, you say that until as they again they go around another corner and he announces that this trunk is getting too heavy. This trunk is now getting too heavy. He's gonna leave it here. He's gonna leave it here in a thicket. He'll come back. The next morning, he'll come back with a cart and pick it up. It's not going to rain. The stuff will be fine, but we'll make much, much faster progress if I don't have to carry this trunk. And Maria's like, okay, fine. She doesn't really have much choice in the matter. And again, still off they go. He's picking up stones and discarding things, and there is still no house in sight. Eventually, she spots a little lone cottage on the horizon in the distance, and what seems to be a road going past. It's a very tumble down, rickety old thing, but she thinks, well, God, perhaps there's someone there. And summoning up all her courage, she stands her ground and she says, I see you have led me wrong. I shall stop here.
Okay.
She confronts this chap. Now, as soon as the words are out of her mouth, the man, he pulls a thick cord from his pocket and he lunges at her with this rope. Oh. Now Marie stumbles back and she is able to avoid his grasping arms by grabbing him and actually pushing him away physically.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah, using all her strength. Now the man obviously is surprised that someone's actually fighting back. What's going on there? He sort of stumbles, slightly taken aback, and she's able to use that opportunity to leg it, to just run. She drops her umbrella and her little bag that she's carrying. Her shoes come off. Her hat gets dislodged, but she's just legging it as you would. She dare not stop to retrieve anything in case he catches up with her.
No, that's it. Go for it.
Just go for it. Absolutely. She does not look back. What she later would say is that she didn't think that he was giving chase. She didn't stop to look, but she didn't hear him coming closer. She didn't hear any crashing through branches and all this sort of stuff. So did he just go, All right, she's gone.
Lost one. Hunter, yeah.
So not a thing.
No chance of catching them.
But as she's running, the moon rises above some trees, and she sees a little white painted farmhouse with some smoke coming out of the chimneys. Hey. There we go. There's somewhere that I can get to. And she legs it across the field, and she bangs on the door, and the farmer lets her in. There is no sign of the attacker in pursuit or anything like that. Just this terrified woman at the door. Now, this story is obviously far too much for the authorities to ignore. This is not just a man being creepy in the forest. is this
which would be enough. Which
wasn't at the time.
It was the style at the time. Men were going to be creepy and try and have sex with you in the forest.
But now this is assault. This is potentially attempted murder. This is something that you can't really ignore. So they
are you sure you weren't leading the rope on?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And also now they have a witness. They have someone who I can identify. This man. So I think, okay, right, we're going to take this seriously. Now, gossip amongst the villagers. Of course, this goes wild through all the little hamlets that there are around there. And all the gossip, all the rumours, they point in one direction. To one man who fits the bill. An antisocial, miserly, old man. Lives with his wife out in the middle of nowhere. No one likes him. Martin Dumoulard. Now I'm a bit parched.
I think it's time
should
for a drink.
Should we have another drink?
I think we should.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/ACAST, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Well, Nick.
Yes.
We have a name.
We have a name.
A name for this brute, this monster of the woods.
Indeed. So Martin Dumoulard. Now, magistrates decide that he seems a good enough place as any to start. So might as well start with him. So they go and ask him a few questions. The first thing they ask him is, well, where were you on the day of the 26th? And he refused to answer.
Not a good sign, mate.
Not a good start. Refuses to answer. And they ask him more questions, but any answers he gives, they're evasive. They're sometimes contradictory. He says, and people are going, nah, something ain't right here. Either you're just really stupid, or you're trying to hide something. You're trying to confuse things.
Where were you this night? I don't know.
Yes, I don't know.
I don't have to tell you that at all. Also, I was dead, but I got better.
Yeah, I got better. So he is not able to give a satisfactory account of his whereabouts. And it is enough for magistrates to go, no, okay, you're coming with us. You're coming in for more questioning. And they do exactly that. They take him in. They take him into Montreuil. And as soon as he arrives at the police station, Marie Pichon identifies him. He is the man who offered me this job, who led me on this merry dance through the wood, who tried to murder me, who tried to kill me. This is him. Now, meanwhile, the authorities are back at Martin Dumoulin's house. So they're searching, trying to find evidence, trying to find anything they can. And they uncover a huge stash of women's clothing.
Oh, God.
There's linens, there's bits of lace, gowns, handkerchiefs, shoes, hats. Everything in the style that a domestic servant would have had.
Ew.
Many of the items have bloodstains that apparently someone has tried to wash out with varying degrees of success.
Oh no, what's the wife got to do with this as well? Oh dear.
In total, they find over 1,250 items of clothing.
Sweet Jesus.
Stashed around the house.
Okay, but that doesn't mean that's a whole 1,200 different...
No. So this could be...
From a person, you know, several.
So if you're looking at a trunk's... all your worldly belongings,
right,
or something...
Oh, yeah, the trunks.
In a trunk, you maybe have 30, 40, pieces or something in that. So yes, so we're not talking 1,250 women.
It's like, shit, but, you did do well in those 6 years.
Yeah, but enough to gather this collection.
But to have that all over the house, just, I guess he's got a remote house, middle of nowhere, all his trophies.
It's there. But then apparently they're not sort of displayed, well, not that you would display them as trophies, but they're just like in drawers and in cupboards and sort of stacked up sort of thing. So who knows? Now, after the discovery of these clothes in the house, the authorities, they start to question Martin's wife, Marianne. Now, she must have known what her husband is up to or why the hell he is bringing back all these clothes.
Where
all this stuff is coming from. Now, Marianne, she is quite happy to talk. Apparently, there is no love loss between Martin and Marianne. As bitter and angry as each other as they are with everyone else in the world, it would seem.
Oh, brilliant. So, oh, good.
Two hateful people forced together, just hating each other and everyone.
Oh, we so rarely get that.
Yeah.
Because I thought you were going to say the wife is seen as some sort of simple,
absolutely not.
She's been just cracking her knuckles.
Yeah.
I have been waiting for the day, lads.
So she quite happily tells of how her husband often brings home bloodstained clothing for her to wash. So she'll scrub away, and if the clothes are nice enough, I might keep some stuff. If it's nice, it'll make it into my wardrobe. If it's nice, if it's a bit past it, then it goes into his pile of stuff that he's got over there.
Shit! So he's just coming in, going, "All right, love, I've got a lot of shit here.
Yeah.
If you wash it and you like it, you can have it.
You can crack it.
If not, can you add it to my pile of weirdness?"
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah, and so
it's practical.
She just goes with it, really. on one occasion, she quite happily tells the authorities her husband came home with a bloody gown, like you do of an evening, and he tells his wife that he's just killed a girl in the woods.
Shit.
Just killed someone in the woods, and then he picks up his shovel and now he's going back to bury her.
Wow.
And she's just there, yeah, right, fine, scrub, 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 scrub.
This will look nicely.
The next day he says, well, we left her trunk, this woman's trunk, this girl's trunk, at the train station, so I'm gonna go back and pick up the trunk. More clothes. And she actually advised him against it. So no, don't go. People ask questions. Mm. So it's just left luggage, and it's discovered later. And she's, I told him not to bother with that.
In my head, it was like he was taking their clothes and putting them on, and dancing
there
around.
There's no record of anything of that.
No, because I feel like the wife would have said immediately
exactly,
that had happened.
Yeah.
But it was all just like, oh, here you go, here's some shit that you can use.
He's not trying to sell it, so it's not theft for getting money or anything like that. He's not trying to sell this stuff, or it's just piling up around the house in like a hoardy sort of weird way.
It's a weird part of the brain that goes, oh, this will be useful. I don't have to buy her. She doesn't have to spend money on clothes anymore.
Yes, that's true. She's able to choose what she wants, and
we'll just keep it around and patch up the curtains with these bloodstained clothes.
This is
Brothers Grimm territory. All right.
So I mean, obviously the authorities are amazed that she is confessing so readily and giving up her husband like this, that they actually decide to test this confession to say, are you actually, are you just bullshitting with us here?
Because our job has never been easier.
Yeah, exactly. You've just given us everything we wanted. Are you actually telling the truth?
Also, this police force can fuck off, quite frankly, because people come in and get help. I've been abducted and nearly raped in the forest. Well, were you though? This man has been killing everyone and I have the evidence right here. Well, is it really evidence though?
Are you sure? Are you sure you're telling the truth?
These guys hated paperwork.
On the 31st of July that year, they actually take Martin and Marianne into the woods. And under Marianne's cajoling, Martin eventually, now quite unhurriedly, leads them to a spot beneath a grand oak tree and points to the ground. The
oh, place, an oak tree! Hey!
A lone oak tree!
Is it in the forest?
It's in the forest, probably not that lone.
It's haunted.
It's now definitely haunted. The police go in with shovels and they're just below the surface. They discover the skeletal remains of a woman. So Marianne has obviously been telling the truth. This woman has never been identified. Now, Martin, he either refused to give up her name or he did not know her name.
Yeah.
We do not know. As the investigations continue, now news of these discoveries and these crimes get more and more widespread, and more witnesses and victims and potential victims come forward. Women like Olympia Alibert and Josephette Shartley from earlier, they actually go, that was us. That was the bastard who tried to come after us. And they go to the authorities again and say, he was the one who did this to us. Connections are made to the previously unsolved murder of Marie Bidet. 6 years earlier, they realise this is all connected. This is all the same thing. Family members of missing women, other potential victims, queue day and night to find out if their loved ones had fallen foul of the Dumelards. Now, eventually, authorities narrow down their list to 11 victims that we can prove.
Yeah.
Three of whom have been murdered. Three of whom have been killed. 11 victims who have been attempted.
Right.
So we know about Marie Bidet, whose body had been discovered in 1855. She seems to be the first that they can positively identify as one of Martin's victims. This is followed by Olympe Alibert and Josephette Chartley. We know about them from earlier. We have Jean-Marie Bourgeois, Victorine Pellin, and Louise Michel. Now, these are women who all fell for exactly the same promise of a good job in a fancy house in the middle of nowhere. But sensed something was wrong, knew something was awry as they traipsed through this forest and they fled. They abandoned their trunks, they abandoned everything they had, and they legged it. So this, again, made increase his stash of clothing, but they survived. They got away. At the time, the women didn't report anything to the police, probably thinking, what the fuck's the point?
Well, I've lost all my I guess.
But now they come forward, reading about these cases, they come forward and going, right, no, we were victims of this too. Then comes unidentified woman revealed by Marianne Dumelard, murdered by Martin, probably in late 1856, they think. Again, we do not know her name, but we assume the ruse was much the same. So a woman who was looking for a better life, out into the forest.
Lured into the woods.
Lured into the woods, and Martin had his way and killed her, buried her beneath the tree. When she was uncovered, there was the suspicion that she had actually been buried alive.
Yeah. What?
Either that he had sort of knocked her unconscious and perhaps believed that she was dead, then buried her.
Yeah.
But then when the doctor examined her later, when her remains were found,
was that she might have suffocated.
She had suffocated. So actually she hadn't been dead, but she'd actually been buried alive. But it had been a long time since she was buried. So I'm not sure
whether you could determine
that at that distance apart. So some reports say she had been buried alive. Some don't really mention it.
Maybe that might be a bit of hyperbole.
Might be a bit later, making it a bit more dramatic. Next we have Julie Farge, who was approached by Martin again in Lyon in 1859. She is offered the same well-paid job in a respectable house. This time Martin had attacked her and tried to rip away some of her clothing, but Julie had screamed so loudly and for so long that actually men from a nearby village came running into the forest to investigate, and Martin had fled.
Ooh.
Martin had actually legged it. Now, Julie, she was taken to the authorities. So you need to report this. You need to report this man and give your statement. But it turns out that the identity papers that she was using they were stolen.
No.
So no one believed a word that she was saying.
Oh, Jesus.
She was actually charged with theft and vagrancy.
Jesus Christ.
For trying to go and report this
Someone
crime.
Someone has attacked me.
Someone's attacked me. Someone has tried to kill me.
I
Someone
have
has
witnesses.
Tried to rape me. These two men rescued me and saved me, but you've stolen your ID papers. Therefore, we're actually going to charge you with theft and vagrancy.
Right,
and
okay.
And forget about everything that you've been through.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to say it. Police force, the greatest poison of them all!
Mm. Another victim is known only as the Unknown of St. Croix. It's a
really?
Very good name.
Unknown of St. Croix.
The Unknown of St. Croix. In December 1859, a miller from the village of St. Croix witnesses an attack on a woman. The miller, Jean-Pierre Chéretin, is walking home when he passes a woman walking accompanied by a man. The man is carrying a large package with him. Not too much later, the woman comes running up to him, explaining that the man has hit her with a branch, stolen her package. It contained everything she owned, and then run off with everything she has. The miller, he tries to pursue this chap, but he is long, long gone. He allows the woman to stay at his home that evening before the next morning she returns to Lyon, and she is never heard of again. When Jean-Pierre, he reads of Dumoulard in the papers and things like that, he recognises this man. This is the man who he had seen walking with this woman all those years ago. He must have been the one responsible for this. And he goes to the authorities and he positively identifies, yes, that is the man who was responsible. But no one knows who the woman was.
No, of course, he
didn't. For whatever reason, he didn't get her name or anything like that.
But
or
he's
she
still was, a witness.
But
he's,
no, exactly.
He's
so
witness,
he was a witness in the case.
Fair enough.
But we do not know who the woman was.
No,
who had been attacked.
Fucking terrified and then running away. Yeah.
So yeah, he was a witness, absolutely, in the trial. Yeah. But yeah, so she's only ever known as the Unknown of St. Croix. this woman. The third confirmed murder, the third confirmed death that Martin was attributed with was Marie-Eloise Bussard. Now, after Martin's arrest, three women went to visit authorities about the disappearance of their sister. Marie-Eloise. Now, Marie had gone missing earlier that year in Lyon. No one had heard from her for several months. The last thing they knew was that she had been offered a good job in the country and that she had to go straight away. Mm. Now, obviously, this now rang alarm bells with the authorities. If this woman had managed to escape like some of the others, then where was she? Why don't her sisters know where she is? Why hasn't she turned up? Or had she, in fact, become another victim of Martin's? The police arranged for women to look through the clothing that had been discovered in Martin's home, and amongst the pieces they find several that they identified as that belonged to my sister.
Those are her
pieces. The police again go out into the woods. If he's buried her anywhere, it's in these woods. This seems to be his
stomping ground, his burial
exactly
site,
to try and find the remains of Marie-Eloise. Martin Dumoulard, he is dragged along on this expedition, and after a few hours of them poking around, the authorities, mainly because Martin seems to be getting bored by this by this point, he turns and says that he will take them to her body. Just get over and done with. Okay. And again, he directs them to a spot under a tree. Whether this one's an oak or not, I don't know. But it's under a tree. And there they find the body of Marie Bussard. Now, the trial starts on the 29th of January, 1862. Now, in front of a crowd of 5,000 people who have assembled to watch Martin and his wife and Marianne on trial.
Yeah.
On the first day alone, 71 witnesses are scheduled to appear.
Oh my God.
It's a busy old day.
It's a busy day, the first day.
They really are rattling through them. Yeah, exactly. The next 2 days are devoted to the hundreds of personal items that have been found. And again, more witnesses who say, that was my sister's, that was my that was my daughter's, this was my friends, who have all gone missing. After 30 minutes of deliberation, Martin and Marianne are both found guilty. Found guilty of everything arrayed against them. Martin is sentenced to death and Marianne to 20 years of hard labour.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Marianne, she is held in Aubervaire prison until she dies. She dies 13 years later, still incarcerated in 1875. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't see the outside again. Martin Dumoulard is sentenced to be executed by guillotine. And on the 7th of March, his execution is carried out. Now, following that, his head is sent to Lyon, to the medical school, to be studied.
Right.
So we need to try and ascertain what has created such a monster?
Yes.
Yeah, so what is there? What is there about the brain? Psychopath. About the brain? About the skull that has caused such horrendous things to be done?
Is it a bit of phrenology?
A bit of phrenology going on there.
Love it.
Until they realise, no, we don't know. We can't tell from the skull. What's
there were
going
no
on,
big bumps.
But we'll
in
give
the
it a damn good
bit.
Go. Some people say they were convicted of 3 murders. Some people put potential victim count into the 20s and 30s. Yeah. That may be slightly fanciful. Other people think under 10, but 3, which is bad enough.
This is a lot.
But 3 they were convicted.
Yeah.
For and a number of thefts and attempted murders.
But you also have 8 witnesses who ran away.
Yeah, absolutely.
At that trial.
Yeah.
So you've got at least 8 women who escaped.
Who escaped? Yeah, exactly.
And these are the ones who are testifying.
Precisely. Yeah. So they've identified these 11 women.
So it makes you think.
3 of whom are dead, 8 of whom are alive and who have escaped by their own wits.
These are the official ones.
Exactly. How many more are there that were never identified, that were never found? We don't know. And that is the story of Martin and Marianne Dumoulard. Some say France's first serial killers.
Da, da, da. They weren't.
They weren't.
Oh, that's a great story.
That's a good story.
One where you go, how have we not heard this story before?
Well, it's one that I must admit, it's one that it's been on my radar for some time.
Yeah.
And I thought, I've never been able to find enough to think I can do a full episode on this one.
Really?
And then only recently, I found another website. I was like, oh my God, this is so good.
Sometimes you have to wait for the resources to come to you.
There we go. Perfect.
Oh my God, that's a great story. Mm. That's really chilling. That's a genuinely creepy story.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't had the bastardometer out in a while.
No.
But I think we should get it out again. Dust it off.
Dust it off. Here is the bastardometer. And also, the police are on the bastardometer right there.
They've not done well by themselves.
It's a crazy crime. It's so rare that we have a full-on... I want to keep going back to Hansel and Gretel and kind of in the woods.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's also very gothic as well. Yeah. I've been reading a lot of gothic books, obviously, right now. Yeah, luring into the woods and these women. I'm going to ask the question. It's not a very nice one. Were they sexually assaulted?
They're on one of them. On the first victim, Marie Bredet, they think there was a sexual assault there. Mm. On the two other, the other victims, it was too far gone to determine such things. But it is more than likely that, yes, that was a component of it.
Because I was wondering whether it's theft or whether it's just compulsion, but it's whatever's happening. It's such a strange setup. And it obviously worked well for him.
Well, yeah, but it is bizarre, as you say, because if the goal was theft, then why not sell the stuff and make some money? Why just have it stored around your house?
No.
If your goal was to rape and to kill women, then why let so many of them get away with relative ease, not even go and chase after them or anything like that? What was the motivation?
That's the thing.
Is really
gives
weird.
You pause, isn't it?
It's really peculiar.
You would think that he would have run after them. You think he would have chased them. Is it a hunter? But then is that you would think with a hunter, he would chase after them, and he's just going.
And he seems to be going, oh, she's run. I'll get the next one.
Some trappers and some hunters are going, oh no, it's gone. There's no chance of getting them. I'll wait for the next one.
Wait for the next one. I've got her shine. I've got some stuff. I've got her trunk.
That's so weird.
With some things. Yeah, I'll wait for the next one.
Is it some sort of practicality? Is that if I have them, if I've caught them, I'll take what I can from them? And unfortunately for those girls, that was everything. But the other ones ran away, go, oh no, I've got a trunk full of stuff. Yeah. And clearly he was taking it back to the wife.
Yeah, and the wife was going, oh yeah, I like that frock, I'll have that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll iron this up and everything, put this on.
Try and scrub the blood out of that and I'll have that.
Well, we can make use of this. It's so weird. It's almost weird. Like a survivalist kind of mentality.
It does have, it does have that sort of like in the middle of the Arctic sort of, or wilderness of Alaska or something like that. Sort of.
Where you're afraid if you met that kind of crazy, in inverted commas, mountain man. Yeah. I'm a hunter and will skin you
as well as eating you. Someone who could come across as entirely respectable.
Absolutely.
And could speak well and dress well to gain the confidence of these women in the first place. So he wasn't just some sort of like forest man living in a tree. He was obviously... Yeah, he came across. He could speak well. He was persuasive and charismatic. And
it was two completely split lives, it
two
seems.
Completely different people.
If the girls are to be believed in that way, and that seems like a horrible thing to say because absolutely we believe them, but the story of them being charming and lovely and very sophisticated and walking along, you know, maybe they weren't. Maybe an opportunity was presented to them. They were like, oh, okay, fair enough. And it was later on going, no, I completely trusted them. And it was just someone who could speak good. And then lured them into the forest and they felt foolish. Because you might feel like a fool afterwards. It's absolutely not their fault. It's just this... He just seems crazy that he lives in this shack in the woods with his... Well, apparently, with his wife.
And I think it's probably more than a shack.
Well, no, not a shack. But it's a house in the woods.
Yeah, it's a little cottage in the woods somewhere.
Sorry, he's upgraded from a shack to a cottage. I'm not saying he was living in one room, but they had a cottage in the woods. It wasn't an estate or a palace.
No, indeed not. No, absolutely.
Alone out there to do whatever they needed to do. But yeah, coming into the city, presenting himself as a gentleman... Mm. And luring these girls in. And it's a cunning ruse to say, amazing job opportunity, but come right now.
Yeah.
Because then you've got no chance of telling your family, sending a telegraph or anything like that.
This is what we need, yeah.
Oh, that's so chilling. Yes,
it's really
horrible.
Interesting. It's a really interesting one.
Oh, God, it's as you said, though. How many other people were there?
Yeah, how many others were there that you just don't know about?
Who were all servants.
Yeah.
No one was looking for them. No one knew. And clearly the authorities were like, oh, well, never mind. They were like, you're lying. This seems like paperwork. And anyone who came up and said, my daughter or my sister or anyone has been missing, they're like, oh, well, they're probably dead.
They're fine. They're somewhere else.
Yeah, they've moved on. Shouldn't have wandered off into the woods. Like, and I can't get over him carrying the trunk. I'm sorry. Because he wanted the stuff.
Well, he wanted the stuff, yeah.
He wanted the stuff. It's weird.
The whole thing is weird.
It's so weird. It's brilliant. What do you think? Think, people, what do you think of the story of
Martin Dumoulard
and his wife
Marianne
who hated him, apparently. Was looking for an excuse to turn him in,
but apparently. So yeah,
no one came a knocking until the police go, oh yeah, he's done everything,
just take him away.
What do you think of the story, the case? Do you know of it? What do you think really happened there? What do you think was the motivation? Do you think there were more murders? Do you think it was just a man who was really motivated by theft and the girls were just an added bonus,
so in the way.
Maybe there were no others. Did he have a big break? Probably unlikely. What do we think of the wife? It's rare that we get a wife who just sells her partner down the river. Absolutely, it was him. I took all their clothes. There we are. I'm knitting. Please don't bother me anymore. And it's nice that there was a lot of good neighbours as well.
Yep,
that's absolutely. Always the horror film that you run to the farmhouse and then the farmhouse is populated by cannibals.
No, the neighbours were good.
They came
to the rescue when they needed to, so good for them.
Tell us what you think. Jump on the comments of this episode wherever you listen to it. Talk to us on social media. Share your thoughts, your theories, and your feelings with other listeners and with us. Send us more suggestions of stories, of course, in the future if this one has inspired you. But, you know, you could mix up a lone oak.
Yeah, you could.
I don't know.
Don't bother. Don't bother.
We drank it.
Well, only because we added the honey.
We ended a lot of honey.
Yeah.
And that made it drinkable. It just was disappointing. It wasn't worth it.
It was not worth it. So don't waste your pistachio on that or your whiskey or your lemons. So make up something lovely. Just let us know what you're drinking.
Because the lone oak was such a disappointment, we need you to send us all the drinks that you're drinking this weekend.
Quite right.
Alcoholic or non-alcoholic, we don't mind being tempted by something.
What's that?
I know. I can't finish that sentence. We could have an non-alcoholic drink.
What's going on there?
No. Just send us pictures of that or some cheese.
Snacks.
Send us more pictures of snacks, actually. The snack game going on. If you haven't already, please come and join us on Patreon and please leave us a review on Apple iTunes to all of our new listeners. If you love what you hear, leaving us a review really, really makes a difference to us and we really genuinely appreciate us. And of course, follow us on social media if you haven't, on Instagram and on TikTok and on Facebook. Join our book club. Do all the things.
There's a lot of things to be done there.
Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the Poisoner's Cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Oh.